Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. It's great to be back. Greetings from a very lovely morning here in Queens, New York. It is only 4 hours time difference this week. Your clocks went back. The New York clocks haven't, which is handy for me because I am eating into the jet lag. I return to Ireland in 6 days, so one-fifth of that jet lag will not be an issue when I get back next Monday morning, flying out next Sunday night. Which is exciting for me because I look forward to seeing everybody and I look forward to getting some Irish people back on the podcast. But in the meantime, I have a very interesting international guest, Mo Ammer, who I don't think a lot of you will have heard of. He used to be part of a kind of comedy group called Allah Made Me Funny. When I say comedy group, I mean a group of comedians traveling together as opposed to a sketch group. They toured the world with a show called Allah Made Me Funny. Mo himself is raised in Kuwait, but he's Palestinian. So already really a sort of a displaced person in Kuwait. His family lived in Kuwait. And then when Saddam Hussein attacked Kuwait, he had to leave. His family had to flee. He tells the story in detail on the podcast. But anyway, he came to Houston, Texas, where he has lived since and where he got into comedy and is now a very successful comedian. Super interesting guy. I've gotten to know him really only over the last couple of weeks gigging in the Comedy Cellar. And he is just like a consistent killer. No pun intended there on the all Arabic joke thing. He kills on stage every single time I've seen him. I mean, I've never seen as consistent a stormer as Mo Ammer. Super lovely guy. And obviously when I heard his backstory, I was dying to chat to him. Now, this chat is not super long. It's maybe like 45 minutes because we literally did this in the car in between shows. So I apologize for that. I promise you I will have Mo back on to talk about things in more detail. But I still think what we have is super interesting. So please enjoy the very interesting life of Mo Ammer.
Hey, what's going
on? I don't have like a...
No, it's all good. Just jump in. I mean,
I don't have like an intro.
Hi, I'm with Troy McClure.
Hi. So, Mo Ammer, right?
Ammer. Yeah, it's the bane of my existence.
But everyone says Ammer, right?
People have said Amber.
Mo like, Ammer?
What kind of Arab parents would name their son Muhammad Ammer?
Yeah, unless they thought he was going to...
Bro, I was
have before, a sex change and get into porn or something.
I had a show in Fort Knox military base, and they give you like a whole cabin on the property.
Yeah,
I show up. They have a welcome envelope. It says, "Welcome, Mr. Ammer."
And I guess the Mo.
That's our military guys. U.S. Yeah. Fucking military. That's where all our reserves are being held in Fort Knox.
And they can't figure out Ammer.
Ammer.
Hammer.
Yeah, it's like hammer without the H.
Oh, yeah, cool. And there's no anglicization on that, right? That's actually the name.
It's Amer, but there's no Amer. There's no Ain, and there's a Ain, which is a letter in the Arabic alphabet. There's no Ain.
So it's like Amir.
Yeah, what should have happened, really, is they should have put double A
yeah
in front of my name. They put Amer, so people start saying Amer. So that helps, but that didn't happen. And when I became a citizen, they said, "Do you want to change your name? This is the time to do it, because it'll be fast. You know, it'll be super easy, and we'll make it happen." And I kind of regret it. Not
you became
doing
a citizen in 2009, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Come on, I did a bit of research.
Yeah,
bro.
You did.
I was like, you were like surprised.
Like, what the fuck is going on right now? That's like, I'm already skeptical of white people. This concerns me that you know this.
So, Mr. Armir, you became a citizen in 2009. We've noticed some activities lately. Well, you know, all joking.
You and my wife. No.
All joking aside.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with Nazim Hussein, but he's...
Yeah, he's from Australia.
Yeah, okay.
He started stand-up because of Allah Made Me Funny. That's our comedy tour that we did when we stopped there.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. Nazim is a good buddy of mine, but he's been on the podcast.
Cool.
But he was pulled in by the Australian Secret Service.
And?
You know, just to say, sorry, every now and then we'll get distracted by people looking for spots because we're parked outside the Comedy Cellar in like a sickly good spot on a Friday night.
It is a really, really good spot, actually. Yeah.
But no. Amazing. Like, he got pulled in and they were just, you know, checking on him and they gave him like the big... And he's heard them on his phone and everything.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were joking there, but actually.
I mean, so much stuff has happened. I don't even know what to pick from. You know?
Oh, right.
Like, you tell me, like, oh, he's a good biggest. I was like, what, you want a fucking cookie? Like, I got so many freaking horrible shit that has happened to my family and so many things that are just really, really just disappointing that have happened and things that you just can't shake. You know, you always have like some layer of paranoia.
Sure.
Will always be in you and never goes away.
Yeah. So let's backtrack a little bit because, you know, when I first met you, I was taken aback. I mean, your story is fucking super interesting. You're not the normal, you know, everyday comic. I moved from New York, from the Midwest. And,
right.
You know,
my parents taking care of me now.
Yeah, so you're from Kuwait.
Yeah. So I was born in Kuwait to Palestinian parents.
Yeah.
So I'm not Kuwaiti. People think I'm, you know, they want to say, oh, you're, you know, people think just because you're born there because of how America's law is written or a lot of Western countries.
Yeah, I know, because I was born in England. I spend most of my time denying that I'm English.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you can't be English, right? Unless you can only, what are you, brother?
I'm American.
American.
But I'm also Irish.
Yeah, you're Irish.
I can have dual.
Yeah, congratulations on that. Throw that in my face. I have so many passports coming out of my pockets. It's exhausting.
Listen, man, I'm like a really white, unoffensive guy.
There's no
Secret Service agency in the world that's concerned about me.
It's phenomenal. No, man, so I was born in Kuwait. It was like, you know, it was really beautiful years. For 9 years I was there. And then the Gulf War erupted.
Yeah.
And we left. We had to leave. I mean, there was very minimal options. My brother was getting his PhD in Houston, so we ended up...
Oh, he was already in Houston.
Yeah, he was studying there, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And then, so would you class as refugees? Was it like a refugee application?
Yeah, of course. So we came over as asylees. So we showed up. My sister and I, they got the paperwork. My sister and I were sent over first. Went on a school bus through Iraq. Like, it was just a really, really crazy story. I mean, we went through there. My mom got us through. My mom went back. We spent like 10 days in Amman, Jordan, getting our paperwork together. And then my mom sent my sister and I to Paris, from Paris to Houston. And then we showed up and, you know, it was extremely difficult, obviously, transition. And I arrived like 2 days before Halloween, something like that. And I... It was such a shock to me, right? There was no internet. There was no, like, you can't keep up with anything. Zero.
Yeah, and that's like not a, that's not a, that's a, that's a real American.
American thing. Like, you just come here and show up 2 days later, everybody's dressed like Satan. And it's like, all women are dressed like whores. I'm like, what is going on? I've never seen even cleavage, much less, you know, that. I mean,
fishnet
I remember.
Tights. And-
I mean, oh, it was crazy to me. And then I remember when I first got here, like, kids were trying to drag me into the bathroom to summon Bloody Mary in the mirror. I'm like, what the fuck? What kind of crazy, how sick is America? Like, this is insane. Why, what is going on? And then I went to a private British English school in Kuwait. Like, you know, my father
so
was
your English
doing
was good,
really
right?
well. My English was really, really good.
But you had like a British accent?
I had a hint of a British accent. Yeah, it was like a little bit, you know.
Yeah, that like international
just
school accent. Faint.
Yeah, international school. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I remember that school, there was a kid that came in from Canada. And he's originally Iraqi, but was born in Canada, and he was the new kid. And he said, fuck, on the playground. And I remember all the kids were like, oh, like it became a huge thing. And a teacher heard him, and they remember him being taken away. And we never saw him again.
Really?
Like, we never
kicked
saw
out of school
that,
for saying fuck?
I have no idea what happened to him, but I just never saw him on the playground. I never saw him in classes. I think he got kicked out of the school, man, for saying fuck. Because it was like third or fourth grade or something, and it's, I guess the school was super strict. We just never heard those words. We never saw, like, you know, I'm telling you, like, I never saw cleavage, much less ass cheeks hanging out. Like, it was not like that, man. It was very innocent, very
chill, that's a major
really
East
beautiful.
Meets West moment.
Major. I mean, like, the friends that I was making in this really shitty apartment complex we stayed in, unfortunately. I mean,
so
imagine
you guys
going
were kind
from,
of wealthy, right?
We were,
like,
and then Kuwaiti we lost
life
everything.
Wealthy.
Yeah, well, Kuwaiti life is different. Again, we have to make this distinction because people think, like, oh, you're born in Kuwait, you must have a lot of money. No. I'm not Kuwaiti. There's only so many thousands of actual Kuwaitis that belong to the Kuwaiti tribe itself. We are Palestinians. So we became refugees again, essentially. It was like my mom and dad's, like, third time, you know, to be exiled from somewhere out that, like, had to move. And my dad lost everything. He lost, like, I don't know, millions of dollars overnight. Gone.
Because of Saddam.
Yeah, because of Saddam, World Bank shut down, everything. I mean, lost everything, essentially. Aside from, like, some money that was left, and I don't know all those details, so young.
Yeah, sure, yeah, yeah.
But I know there was some to be able to get us out and things like that, and my mom's, you know, exit strategy money just in case my dad fucked up or something, like, she had her savings.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
There was all that was there, man, and yeah, man, we ended up in Houston, and it was just a huge shock, bro. I remember, like, making these friends, and they were, like, taking out Playboy magazines, like, look what I found my dad's thing. I was like, oh, my God, what is that? You know,
how old were you?
It freaked me out. It was 10. How old am I now?
No, you were 10 then, right?
I was 10 at that point. Wow. I was like, yeah, it was.
So just, like, your first everything.
It was crazy, man. I was like, what is your dad doing with this? You know, and I couldn't take my eyes off. I was 10 years old, loved women, obviously. And then just, like, staring, I was like, those are amazing. You know, like, what is that? I just started learning everything. I learned all the horrible shit in America.
Yeah. were your family, like, very, very religious?
What does that mean, right?
Well, like,
so
what
you have
I mean
to, like,
is,
illustrate,
like,
it.
Okay, well, no, I'll just use, like, a Catholic example. Like, when I first moved to Ireland in 1990, because I had a similar thing to you in a way. I went to boarding school in Ireland. So, you know, Ireland was just more Catholic, more strict around sexual stuff, and definitely less open.
Sure, sure.
So I was just wondering, like, did you guys have a kind of a more traditional sort of...
Yeah, we definitely come from traditional background. You know, my mom still to this day prays 5 times a day, mashallah. Like, she's killing the spirituality game. My aunts are very, very spiritual. My uncle is. Like, yeah, it's very... put it this way. I'd like to frame it as we are believing people.
Yeah.
We are people who believe the strictness and, like, how it dresses. Nobody, like, covered up completely in a niqab or something like that. It doesn't really exist in my family. And all that is, like, a personal choice. There's no, like,
I meant it more from the point of view of at 10 years old. This would have been...
Yeah, it's definitely. It would have been 100 times the shock, actually. If I walked in and I showed my brother and my sister what I had just seen, they would have freaked out. 100% freaked out. My brother probably not so much. My sister 100%. I mean, my sister still freaks out about anything.
Oh, she's still quite.
She has
sort of
no, like, gangster skills whatsoever. No, she just can't keep herself contained.
How old was she when she came?
She was 19, I think.
Oh, she was 19 when you guys left. Oh, so you're the youngest.
I was the youngest, yeah. I'm still am, yeah.
Ah, you're still the youngest.
Still the youngest. I just, you know, assumed, like, we didn't have any, my mom didn't have more babies or anything.
But in the end, the whole family was there, right?
Yeah, the end, majority of the family, man, I have a sister spread out. We're all spread out, man. That's the thing about Palestinians, bro. It's very unfortunate, but we're spread out all over the world. I mean,
sure.
There's so many of us in so many different parts that had to adjust and do that. And, you know, it's been very, very tough. I mean, definitely leaving Kuwait. At that moment in time and the way things have unfolded has affected our family lives dramatically. Things will never be the same.
Yeah.
I mean, we lived on a street where my uncle was down the street, my aunts around the corner, everybody hung out. Every Friday we would chill. Like, my other aunts would come in from the West Bank, come in every once in a while, hang out, you know, whoever, you know, because at some point they got jobs somewhere else, their kids grow up, they got to go live with their kids or whatever.
Oh, so you still had family in Palestine?
Yeah, I still do. Absolutely. Yeah. We have deep roots there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to jump forward, but I just, it's on my mind now because you're talking about it.
Here we go.
Well, no, because people don't seem to factor in the hurt, the dislocation, the separation of somebody in a situation where they need to apply for refugee status.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. Yeah.
So that must be driving you crazy at the moment.
Of course, where man. Here, it drives me sick, man. It's like you're all displaced peoples. You're all. This whole country was built on that and is defined upon that. This whole statue, fucking Statue of Liberty that was given to you. I mean, read what it says, interpret what it says in French. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, what happened along the way where you're so heartless and thoughtless about the situation? And America has such vast lands. There's so many unoccupied lands. There's so much space here. We can certainly do so. And I think we would be a lot more open potentially to the idea if we were, number one, more educated. I mean, even the iPhone, people don't know that Steve Jobs is Syrian, like half Syrian. His father, yeah. His father's a Syrian refugee. Like, not, well, not a refugee, but asylee. I don't know his exact situation or what his dad was, but he's 100% Syrian. Guy's an Arab dude. DeBakey, who created the first bypass surgery and heart surgery and revolutionized the surgical game, is an Arab guy. Yeah, algebra. I mean, they went to Europe and taught Europeans how to wash their ass. People were just like, what are you talking about? We're a very sophisticated culture, and it's very, very sad what's happened in the Middle East. And it's very sad how the educational system has gone down so much, and people have no fucking clue how bad it was. Like, when I came to the States, when I was in fourth grade in Kuwait, for instance, going to that British English school, I was already getting prepped for pre-algebra. I was learning multiple languages at the same time. I would go to my English class, and then I would go to my Quranic studies and Arabic studies class.
Yeah.
I would go there and do that. I think we hold kids small, like, oh, we should baby them and shit. No, no, no.
No, that's the time to learn
languages. It's the time to learn languages. It's time to get to retain as much information as possible. My teacher has this really dope line, Des, you're going to love this. He said, memory in young age and early age is like etching in stone. Memory in old age is like painting on water. Isn't that great, man? It's so true, man. You need to just totally give it. And I come to the States, they put me in ESL class. I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm speaking better English than most kids in there for sure.
Oh, that's right. You were in it like a...
English class. I would go to math. They're still at like, you know, 5 apples plus 7 apples is 12 apples. You know, like, what the hell? This is so boring. I immediately checked out. And plus not having my mother here for 9 months and my father not coming for another year and a half. Like, it was very, very difficult adjustment.
Yeah, that's a... massive transition.
It was 100% really, really affected me dramatically, you know. I was like, this is so easy. All you have to do is just like remember and regurgitate.
Okay, yeah,
this is so easy. I can do this. So I didn't really give a shit.
But did you get in trouble then, or you were?
Oh, I was getting in trouble. Yeah, I really started getting in trouble in middle school, but I wasn't really getting that. I was being picked on because I was still trying to get what was cool and what was not cool, you know. We didn't have, because, again, we didn't have, like, oh, I can't believe you're wearing those shoes. Ha, 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 you know?
Yeah.
We didn't have that. Oh, we don't have that culture at all.
Before you left, yeah.
Yeah, before I left, there was no culture. First of all, in school, it was uniform, so everybody wore the same damn thing.
Yeah.
So that kind of helped neutralize that. But also, like, in school, like, yeah, people loved Adidas. Like, Adidas was the shit and still is the shit. Like, people love it, and you wore it, and if you can get Adidas, it's fine. But if you're wearing some shoe, like, you know, they're not going to make fun of you for it being off-brand. I didn't know that. You know, I'm not supposed to know that Payless is a really shitty store and my parents were being cheap, or my sister, whoever was buying them for, was being cheap. I didn't know that. I was just like, oh, cool, these are black and purple. Those look kind of cool. I'll buy those, right? And then I remember we're laying down doing like workshop work in fifth grade, and I'm laying, you know, on my stomach on the ground drawing, and I have my feet up, and it said Pro Wings clearly at the top of it. And this kid goes crazy. He goes, oh my God, Mo is wearing Pro Wings. Like,
Pro
Wings.
Oh, Pro Wings. Yeah.
People were calling. Man, I became like the laughing stock. I came home. I was like, I can't wear these guys. You don't know what I'm dealing with. And my family's like, stop being stupid. Stop being silly. You need to go back and wear these shoes and da da da. I was like, you don't know the trauma that I felt in class today. Everybody was laughing. Apparently, these are some really bad shoes that make me, you know,
and they've been displaced 3 times. They're not really.
Yeah, I'm like, come on. They don't give a damn. Like, you got shoes, you asshole. We could be still in the desert, shoeless and countryless. I dealt with it, you know, and I would get beat up and I just get like left fielded. Nothing like that ever happened in our school. So nothing ever happened like that. It was just a different system and a different level of sophistication and things that were happening. I was really saddened by it. I mean, that was
you
like the second
though? Like in those years, were you like angry, resentful?
I was angry because we were displaced for sure, and I was angry because I missed my mom and she came. You know, I was a 9-year-old kid, and
sure,
my dad was sick, and my dad got sick, and and just kind of had a sudden heart attack and passed away when I was 14. Like, it was a very excruciatingly painful.
That's a tough adolescence.
It's a really, really tough. I started working when I was 11 at my dad's 99 cent store. And then he died in that store. He actually had a heart attack in
that
store.
But your dad was a biochemist, right?
No, my dad was a telecommunications engineer.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, my father was God rest his soul. He was a telecommunications engineer. Was like instrumental in honing in the technology for wireless communication between oil rigs. He worked for Kuwaiti Oil Company.
Right.
And he was part of the team that brought the first radio station to Kuwait as well, which was really cool in the 70s. I mean, my mom tells me stories like he had the first cell phone. Like, he was infatuated in love with phones. And we had a garage full of phones. Like, he would, you know, invent phones and constantly working on different technology. I remember being with my dad, like, fixing stuff and working with him as a little kid, just kind of like, you know, pretending, you know, and he would try to teach me how to sod stuff, how to put together, how to put the lines together.
Yeah.
It was really, really fascinating. And that's what he did. So they coming to the States and he opened up a 99 cent store. I mean, it was really weird for my dad to go from that job to this job.
I was just making sure.
Yeah, were you making sure we're
just
recording?
Just talking about interesting shit. I was like, Jesus Christ, man, this motherfucker better be recording.
So yeah, man. So that's,
yeah, but
I
so
mean,
then
it was tough.
So then he end. But in America, he just had a 99 cent store, or he got.
Yeah,
a,
he had a 99 cent store.
My dad
was so legit. He was doing well. Yeah, but I mean, like,
you're in Houston, right?
Yeah, we're in Houston. You came as a Siles and all that. I mean, like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
So my dad opened up a business. This is what he knows. He knows business, and
so
he
you
just
guys
loves
were comfortable
him.
In Texas.
I mean, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's my home now. I mean, Houston is
no, but what I mean is you guys weren't poor or anything. You guys did okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we weren't like, you know, we had a couple of rough moves. You know, we didn't really know what the neighborhood was like, and we kind of had to go there and be there.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There was a couple of apartment complexes that probably shouldn't have ever been there. Mm. Friends with, I mean, like one year, one Halloween, they were just like throwing rocks at cars. I'm like, well, this is the worst Halloween ever, guys.
We used to throw eggs.
Can we just get? It's much better. Much better idea. This guy, I remember he grabbed a fucking rock as big as my adult palm, and he throws it at the station wagon in horror. I'm like, what are you doing? Was definitely not my friend. He was 100% the neighborhood bully. I was terrified of him, and I hate him. And he threw this thing at the station wagon. Boom, hits the station wagon on the back. Guy just, and it's Texas. Everybody has a gun, bro. This guy grabs his pistol and starts chasing after all the kids in the freaking area. I was like, oh my God. I get in the apartment. I got like one piece of candy in my bag at this point, right? My mom's like, what's wrong? What happened? I thought you were trick-or-treating or whatever. I was like, yeah, I'm just not really into it. She was like, you look terrified. I was like, no, I'm just tired. I just want to run here. I just had like one like quarter piece of Reese's or something like that, and I just stopped. It was just a really crappy neighborhood.
Yeah. But
that's where I learned how to play the dozens, though.
The dozens?
Yeah, playing the dozens, talking shit about each other, which was horrifying to me because mother is the most sacred thing you have. I mean, like, it's taught to you as a kid and raised as a Muslim. It's like your mother is like, she's number one. She was mentioned actually three times. The Prophet Muhammad, actually, peace be upon him, would mention, like, you know, it's God, your mother, then your father. That's how he highlighted the importance of the mom.
Of the mom.
He mentioned her three times between God and dad. It's very interesting, you know? So for me, it's just like, yo, that's what it's all about. So I'm walking to school one day. It's like, your mama's so fat, she used a boomerang to put on a belt. Oh, your mama's so fat, she used a bale of hay as a tampon. Oh, yeah. I was like, oh my God, they're about to kill each other, right? I'm thinking like, there's going to be a war here because wars would get started and back
over
home.
Shit.
You talk about your mother that way, bro, they're bringing brothers, sticks, stones. Weapons are going to be drawn out. No, people were having a good time. I was like, God dang, I can't believe this is okay. You just called his mother a whore. This is unbelievable, essentially. He's like, your mom was like a hardware store. Everybody gets a screw.
I remember that.
Oh, my
one.
God. I can't believe they're doing
this. Mom's
like
7-Up, never had it, never will.
Yeah, your mom was like McDonald's, over 2 billion served.
Yeah, all that.
Right. Your mom was like a doorknob. Everybody gets a turn, you know? So many of them.
Your mama's so fat, she wears an X-Factor t-shirt, helicopters land
on her. Yeah, exactly. Your mama's so stupid, she thought a quarterback was a refund. Your mama's so stupid she sat on TV to watch the couch. You know, I remember all those, man. Dude, and that's what
But anyway,
me
so like
that,
you got into that though, right?
Oh,
not,
I got
not the
into
mothership,
it.
But just the ripping on each other?
Oh, yeah. We just got into it. We had so much fun with it. I became really, really good at it. And that was pumped me up because I did make a decision to be a comedian when I was 10.
You made a decision at 10?
Yeah, I saw Bill, my brother. God bless him. He took me to get my mind off of stuff. And in Houston, they have this massive Houston livestock show and rodeo. It's like 3 weeks of rodeo, carnival, and massive concerts at the Astrodome. At that time, they were still having them at the Astrodome. And it was just so fascinating because I never heard of stand-up, you know, never heard of it. I mean, people really don't know this. There's only three indigenous American art forms. It is blues, jazz, hip hop, and stand up comedy. So jazz and hip hop really spread like wildfire.
Mm.
And you don't have, stand up was not a thing.
Yeah, well, it's tougher to travel anyway.
Tougher to travel, number one. Number two is there was no internet. There was no YouTube videos. There wasn't the ability that we didn't live in this like really compartmentalized, really globalized world. This essentially we're like one planet, man. Everybody looks up the same
shit.
Yeah,
yeah, the same shit.
It's really, really interesting. And I saw Bill Cosby live. In front of, he was co-headlining with the band Alabama, and he goes up first, naturally, because you don't follow music anyway. He goes up and does, I don't know, like an hour. It felt like 10 minutes, but he did like an hour.
And you loved it.
And he, 60-some-odd thousand people in the massive dome, and he's in the middle of this like all sand field, because they were just having the rodeo, people riding bulls, and they have this stage that rotates ever so slightly. It's the stage, a single chair and a lapel mic, and this man was decimating the entire, I mean, he just murdered the whole place. I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
You know? My brother goes, it's a stand-up comedy. I looked at him and was like, that's what I'm going to do for a living. He looks at me and goes, you're crazy. You know, like he thought I was having one of those like 10-year-old, like, oh, he's such a little kid, you know? He's so silly.
Yeah.
I was like, no, man, I'm really going to be a comedian. What are you talking about? Like, it's amazing, over. It's a wrap, bro. Effect. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. You're totally
the art form,
this.
Not the man. Yeah, the man let you down in the end.
Exactly. 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 You know, I try not to think about him in that way. It's hard not to, man. I've got a lot. But yeah, man, that's where I became, you know, I knew I was going to be a stand-up, but I didn't know how it was going to all come together. And then my dad dies when I was 14, and I started skipping really hard. I was living like a Ferris Bueller's Day Off. By the way, I was like a grown man by the time I was 14.
You mean
like
a
I've
beard
already been working?
That?
No, I didn't have a beard. Couldn't have them in school. I still looked like a little boy, but I was like a grown man. Like I already worked for 2.5-3 years at that point. I had a job at a convenience store that my dad's friends owned. So they gave me a job there. I would drive my mother's van illegally and take her to work, and then I would go to school, and I would park way out near the high school stadium, and I'd walk because, I didn't have a parking pass,
much less a driver's license.
So I would walk over there. I was selling, like, fake Versace sunglasses and Rolexes and Movados and Tag Heuers to, really wealthy drug dealers in the neighborhood, you know, taking wild risks like that. I was doing, some crazy shit just to make a little extra money. So I felt like a really, like a grown man. And I had money. I had a pretty decent amount of money for somebody who was 14 years old. And we would go, and my other buddy, he was 2 years older than me and friends from the neighborhood, like really tight. He would come pick me up and we'd skip school and go to like Houston Astros playoff games and come back to school. Like, where you been? I was like, oh, this is a playoff game. You were out with the Astros. They sucked. They lost. And they choked. You know, I was living that kind of life, man. It was crazy, man. It was crazy to take trips to Mexico, like, tell my mom I'm going all night bowling. Like, it's horrible.
And you didn't have the anxiety of fucking around? Like I remember when
I had some
anything remotely like that, a lot of anxiety.
I had a lot of anxiety when we went to Mexico, for sure. Melted away when I was just having such a fabulous time with the Latinos down there. It was a really great time. really, really great time. Those are memories that I'll never forget because those are like, we had our own hangovers, you know? Like, we were teenagers, we already had them. I would go to casinos and I had a fake ID and I would go to the casinos in Louisiana, 15, and I would put on scrubs, you know, like the nurse's scrub.
Yeah.
So I bought some. There was a nurse that would come into the convenience store. I was like, oh, yeah, exactly. I was like, can you get me one of those? She's like, yeah, what are you going to do with it? I was like, I think I'm going to go to the casino with my boy. I think it would be really great if I wore one. It looked like I just came off work. Da-da-da. She was like, yeah. She got me one. I put that. It was very comfortable, by the way. So caught the little bus, the little, you know, at the Chinese locations, full of Chinese people get on there.
Yeah.
And pay $5 and they just barely look at the ID, whatever. Now we're at the casino.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And they didn't have all that crazy technology. You couldn't Google stuff. So they didn't have all the ability to like scan your stuff.
Yeah, and yeah. Back
it was
in
nothing
day.
Like that. It would just look at it, and it was a really flawless. Aside from having hologram stuff, it was really, really good copy of Mississippi driver's license. And they didn't even check it. Actually, I just walked in the first time with the scrubs on, and I was like playing blackjack and learned how to play mahjong from these Chinese people. It was great, man.
So we were living it up. Had some teachers though that were like. Saying you
so
got
this
some
is what
potential.
Happened. This is what happened. Yeah, it's good. You're a phenomenal hostess. So real, bringing it back in. So when I was 14, and I have, you know, have really, really good friends. We're super tight to this day. There's 8 of us that grew up together in a neighborhood. One unfortunately died in Afghanistan, and they're all wildly successful. They all have done very well. I mean, from pharmacists. I mean, Buddy Vinny is the 89th flight commander in NASA's history. He's the guy who takes care of launches and stuff. He's amazing. So I saw my friends like really achieving, and obviously I come from an educated family. Like, it's really weighing on my heart at some level. So my English teacher in 9th grade walks up to me and she says, "Mo, you're slipping. You know, my dad died over Christmas vacation." Mm. So when I came back, I just didn't give a shit. Skip, whatever. My mind wasn't in it. I still have that report card. It was like 50s, 20s. Like, I had horrible grade. I had like a 10 in wood shop. Who the hell has a 10 in wood shop, right? In metalworks class. And my teacher's like, "How would your father feel if you don't graduate?" And I started crying. I was like, "He would be devastated. I would be devastated."
Yeah.
"It would be horrible." She goes, "You say you want to be a comedian, right?" I was like, "Yeah, I want to be a comedian." She goes, "Okay, I tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. You go up in front of the class right now," because we were studying Macbeth at that time. She goes, "You can recite any Shakespearean monologue you want. You go up in front of the class, you recite it now. I'll give you the same grade you had the first semester," which was like a high B, I think it was, something like that. I was like, "Yeah, what do I have to do though?" She goes, "Well, I'll give you that grade, and I'll let you do stand-up every Friday." Okay? I was like, "All right, I'm listening." She goes, "But the thing is, you can't ever skip. If you skip, you miss school, you ditch, you don't have an excuse, I will flip that grade back exactly where it was, lose everything, deals off, no stand-up, nothing." I was like, "Is that it?" She's like, "Yeah." Like, shit. Went up front, I was like, "Can I do it now?" She's like, "Yeah." I freaking wiped these little tears off. I was like, grabbed the book, because I went to the classic, "To me or not to me."
Yeah, you did
the accent.
Hamlet.
Fucking murdered. People were loving it. I was like, "Yo, this is intoxicating." She was like, "Tomorrow's Friday. Be ready." I was like, "Oh, shit. All right." I was scared. I didn't have any, like, written material. So I went home and listened to, like, Jerky Boys for inspiration.
From Queens.
Yeah, from Queens. Oh, they? Yeah, I didn't know they were from Queens. Definitely New Yorkers. So I was just listening to them. I was like, "Oh, that's cool." So I came up with, like, this whole, like, pizza delivery guy being Indian. Like, I just came up with this whole thing. And it was just great, man. And I was stuck. And then I did stand-up every year in high school. Like, she took me to all my classes. She introduced me, said, "Hey, do stand up for me." I mean, one time my Spanish teacher got me out of 3 other classes to do stand up and mix Spanish in. I got out of 3 classes. I did 3 shows
that day.
That's
amazing.
Yeah, and I would do this whole thing where I would wear like a super tight jacket, and I would do an impression of Chris Farley you know, fat man in a small coat while improvising, shitting on, you know, the kids in the audience. Oh, look, your ankles are so ashy and all this stuff. This girl got so mad, flicked me off in the middle of class. It was great.
So what? That teacher is like, when's your next? I gotta find her. Right?
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
We got a bit of time. But I know. This is my first In Between Gigs podcast.
Yeah, I know. This is cool. This is cool. You got a spot soon too, don't you?
Midnight.
Midnight. Okay.
I came in early for you, man.
Oh, dude, thank you.
Well, your
man.
Story's too interesting not to get it on record. I mean,
and you
sure
couldn't get anybody else, could you, Des?
No, I fucking.
I'm just kidding. I'm teasing.
No, because you know, when you said you're like a Palestinian born in Kuwait, I was like, come on, this is every fucking NPR
smuggled
station in the world
on a school
is dying.
Bus.
NPR is dying to interview you, man. You got the whole package.
Yeah, we talk to Terry Gross and see if she.
Yeah,
can get
Islamophobia, the whole package.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, man.
But anyway, just before we get off it,
sure.
Do you have any contact with that teacher now or not?
I don't, man. I really want to find her, though.
Because
I had two English teachers in ninth grade. They were both like, each one would specialize in different. It was a weird class. But it was fun, really fun class. And I think it was Mrs. Broderick. Man, I hope to find her. I should really try to find her.
Because I had a similar enough experience, fun enough when I was 14. I was getting kicked out of school. But I had a great teacher who gave me a little bit of a break.
Amazing.
Well, I wrote a book about my dad, coincidentally enough.
Oh, cool. What is it called?
My dad was nearly James Bond.
Long story. Dope, man.
It's a long, long story. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But when I wrote the book, I dedicated it to my family because it was after my dad died. So I dedicated it to the rest of the family and to Mr. Passione because basically he made me write. That was the deal. He said, look, I'll give you better grades if you write. Write whatever the fuck you want, but just write anything.
That's really awesome.
So it's funny.
Man, teachers
funny how
shit,
teachers
dude.
Are like that.
Man, teachers, I mean, good
you
ones, man.
Find
that
teacher.
I remember all the good ones, okay? Mr. Steak in fifth grade, okay? I remember him clear as day. Lou Jean Kreisner, my theater arts teacher, who happened to be in sixth and seventh grade, and then she became my high school theater arts teacher, which, by the way, I was too scared to join until Ms. Broderick dragged me over there. She says, this kid keeps doing all these different accents, coming in with original material. Can you please do something with this kid? He needs your help.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. Next thing you know, I'm like pulling leads and singing. I didn't know I could sing. I'm doing like funny thing ever the waveform. I'm playing Pseudolist. It's amazing.
But the funny
and
thing
she
is,
did
that's what
that.
You should be doing. But
as a teacher,
that's
yeah.
The problem
what,
with the education system
exactly.
is that for somebody like you, you should be doing that.
Well, look, I mean, I think the teachers would be way more involved if they weren't worried about their fucking bills. You know, like how they're going to pay for their next whatever. I mean, they get paid so poorly for the intense job that they have to do, and they don't have the tools to like engage the students. I mean, some of them get really creative and they're very passionate, and you see these, you know, viral videos. Oh, this teacher did this and that. But not every teacher's like that, man, in the system and how they are and what they learn. I mean, even the textbooks and how far. I mean, how can you not be studying Malcolm X in class? How are you not studying Malcolm X? Like, real black history. How are you not studying that? How are you not studying the era Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King to the details which you'd be studying? How is that not part of the system?
To spend so much time on the Revolutionary War, which is important to know how the nation was created, but
it's important.
Less relevant to your life than
exactly
how modern America exists.
Exactly. I think there's a huge gap in that, and it's very frustrating on what they learn and how they learn it, and it's really just like copy-paste kind of learning.
So let me ask you this, something
go ahead,
different.
Let's switch it up, yeah.
Because this is a conversation I've been dying to have for a long time a Palestinian.
Oh, God. I still need to work in this business, okay? You can't
be. Yeah, no, listen, don't worry about it, man. It's all good.
No, we're good.
I live in Ireland. In Europe, there's definitely more sympathy with the Palestinian cause than there is here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That must be frustrating for you, right? I'll give you a quick example, then you can jump on it. My liberal American friends tend to be quite critical of Palestinians and the way that their perception of their behavior. My liberal Irish friends 100% have a sympathy towards the Palestinian cause.
Mm-hmm.
So that must be interesting for you to see that divide.
I don't even know where to start.
It's a biggie.
It has eaten a piece of my soul on a daily basis.
Right, yeah. I mean, don't get yourself in trouble. I get it.
No, it is. No, it is. It has eaten a part of my soul pretty much regularly. It's nothing about getting in trouble or nothing like that. It's just I love everyone. The fact that I even have to preface that shit with that conversation is fucking utterly infuriating. You know, we've been there for years. We've been there. There's obviously people had to move. People didn't leave their houses easily. How are you going to do that? Once you're given a particular land and there's people that exist there, and you walk in and you take them. There's people that still have their house keys. They're living in tents. They still have their house keys with somebody else living in their home. They have to acknowledge that, at least acknowledge that there is a massive exodus. There was a huge situation. And it's really, really unfortunate that none of that is acknowledged at all. That's not justifying any extremist behavior.
Yeah, it's a separate thing anyway.
But there's extremists on both sides. I sit down with Jewish peoples all the time. I say I have lots of friends. I mean, look, I work here.
We're a comedian in New York. Run by an Israeli.
I mean, like, you know, it's all love. It's all love. I do what I do. I'm here. My job is to get laughs, and that's what I do. I'm supposed to do that. And that's fine. But it's really frustrating when you can't even acknowledge those things. I can acknowledge our side. It's about acknowledging your side as well. And the fact that it's just sick. It's a sick situation, man. Anytime bombs are being dropped on peoples and there's people standing on a cliff eating popcorn watching bombs being dropped, it's a fucked up situation.
Yeah.
And if it was my people doing that, I would be the first person to say that about my people. You blowing yourself up on a fucking bus doing that is not the right way either. Those things are not correct. There's no buts, ifs, or anything like that. It's just a sad situation. And it's unfolded really, really horribly. And the wall is not good. There's never been a wall in history that's ever been sustainable aside from the Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
And it's very, very sad. And now it's done. You have no. It's tough, man. It's a tough fucking life. And I don't know what the answers are. All I would like to see is all of us chill together and hang out together. And give us at least credit for the hummus and the falafels and everything else. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. At least own that it's our shit. That's our shit.
Yeah, but do you think in America, that people are not?
I got to give them credit, man. Who the hell? I was asking my Arab homie yesterday. I was like, man, did you ever think about putting hummus in Tupperware and selling that shit at like 900% profit? He was like, never. I'm like, they're fucking geniuses. God damn, they're geniuses. You know, it's so infuriating as an Arab walking into a place and seeing some hummus sitting there. This is obviously Middle Eastern and Arab, and it's ancient to us. It's like, what the fuck have we been doing? We are horrible. Muslims, Arabs, all over the planet, Asians, I don't care what Muslim background you come from, we have the worst publicists in history. Like, we have zero publicists. Well, we have the worst.
At the moment, it's really bad.
The worst. We are the worst. Our publicists should be fired.
Yeah, I mean, so.
Yeah, where I stand, just to be clear, though, about the Palestinian-Israeli-Jewish thing, it's like, it's so, I hate it when they make it into a religious thing. It's not a religious thing. It's not Jews and Muslims hate each other. It's bullshit, man. And when the Jews were getting persecuted and things were happening there, they would come and they would seek refuge with Muslim peoples because they could relate to them the most and they had the closest etiquette to them. We're both on the lunar calendar. We both have similar practices. We both have there. They would do that. In Europe as well, when being persecuted and things like that, when Muslims were in Spain, a lot of Jews and a lot of people would come and have their dealings settled in Muslim courts and actually have them there. People need to know this fucking history. It's so infuriating. Commercial break in New York City. So it's just very, very frustrating to those are facts when they were there. My grandfather, God rest his soul, in the West Bank, used to work in Haifa. We had a house in Haifa. Now we live in Budin. He moved back there. He was a great, great man. He would walk, and he had Jewish friends. He had Christian friends. It was all good. They used to go down the street, hang out during Christmas, visit them with the Christians and chill. They would go hang out after the Sabbath, then following day when they were chilling, relaxing, having some coffee together, play cards together. This is all shit that was happening when there was no walls, it was convenience. He used to drive from Amman to go pray in Jerusalem. Tell me how my aunt, who lives in the West Bank, can't go pray in Jerusalem. Yeah. She's not allowed to cross over to that line. It's so bad.
I mean, I would imagine that the majority of people, even myself, I've never, I mean, I'm up on it, don't get me wrong, but yeah. I've never pondered what a pre-1930 Palestine was like.
Yeah, it was phenomenal, man. It was great. Like, I never it was vast land. I was looking at pictures yesterday. I mean, I took my mom back there for her first visit in 38 years, most recently, last August. And I took her back to her parents' house, my grandparents' house, you know, who've been dead for many years now. And it was her first visit back. Last time she was there, they were all alive. My great-grandmother was still alive. Like, she was in her 90s. She was there. They were, like, you know, happy. Even at that time, it was better.
Yeah.
And to have a wall that separates literally families, you can't go to the other side. Like, there's neighborhoods that are cut in half by the wall where if you're like brother owned that house next door, it's over. You can't see him. You have to FaceTime him. You literally cannot see him. Can you imagine? And my feelings about the wall is that when you keep each other separate, you can't ever bond. You can't ever get anything out. You can't get the shit out of the way, you know?
Yeah.
You can't, like, you got to take the wall down. Yeah, the wall has to be gone. We all have to be one, you know, chilling together, talking to each other, get angry with each other. There's going to be people are going to kill each other. It's going to happen. But eventually it's going to stop. Eventually you're going to grow. Eventually you're going to be better. Eventually,
so you're going to,
those relationships are going
to
be better.
There is possibility for hope of the end of tit-for-tat violence, people blaming each other, all these things.
It's going to happen. You have to get it out. Like the civil rights movement, people upset, there's hoses, yeah. All the shit. But there's things that did get better, you know,
yeah. I mean, able to vote. It happened in the north of Ireland, but.
I
feel like it's more entrenched now with the Israel-Palestine.
Yeah, I don't know, man. All I know is I walk this earth loving everyone until they give me a reason for something.
So can you be
otherwise.
Funny about it on stage?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I do a whole bit about it. I do, you know, it took me a while to find something that is, that's really, you know, can correct it. Most importantly, hilarious, you know?
Yeah.
It's not funny.
Here.
It sucks.
It's important
so
in America.
I have a phenomenal German joke that I do that me traveling, you know, with a refugee travel document, and I bring it all together in that joke.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, that's the joke. I did it actually for the first time when I did it with all the seasonings, or all the right seasonings, right? It was half-baked at that point, and it was, like, working well, but it still had potential, one of those situations. Yeah. And one time I was doing, like, this interfaith show at a big theater in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and it was all these, like, Arabs and Jews were there. It was great. And I decided to do this joke, and I finally found, like, the rest of the seasoning, right? So I do the joke in the middle of my set, and it just killed so hard that I saw Arabs and Muslims stand up, give me a standing ovation in the middle of my set. I was like, you know, as a comic, I was like, that's a bad idea. How am I going to follow
this?
How
are you going to follow this shit?
How am I going to follow this? And it was, everything else was mediocre after that. I mean, it was just like, yeah. One of those, like, oh, that's the closer now. Move that over. So it was one of those situations. Like, oh,
but it
I
works
got something.
Here.
Like, oh, it kills. Yeah, it kills. Kills, yeah. Even Ryan Reese was like, man, you're doing something that probably most people didn't even, that forgot about it, you know?
About
that,
the
it's like educational and things like that. I didn't even think about it that way. I was just like, you know, I was experiencing some difficulties in Germany traveling with a travel document, and that's what I was spitting out.
Yeah,
and
but
I thought
now
it made
it's
a
like,
point.
Come on, that's like, couldn't be any more topical.
Yeah, I mean.
Now.
Well, now could have been still topical for like 50 years plus 60 years. But it's definitely, it's needed. I believe it's time. If I'm the guy to be able to do it, I feel like I am. I feel like I have the ability to like speak to both.
Yeah, because Islamophobia is definitely out of control. I mean, I'm sure you're sick to death talking about
but it's
Islamophobia.
Not even, but it's not, I am sick to death about it, but it's not even Islamophobia. Like this is a whole different thing to me, you know? Palestinians and Israelis, like you've heard this term, Israeli Arabs. What do you think those are? What are Israeli Arabs?
Oh, Palestinians. Yeah.
Yeah. There were Palestinians that were able to stay after the 48 territories. Those are the people that were able to stay in that time. They call them Israeli Arabs. Like they celebrate them. Oh, he's actually Israeli Arab. It's like, nah, man, this guy's Palestinian, bro. Why are you trying to jack that situation? Just let the Palestinians have something. Like, you know,
let them have their identity.
Yeah, I mean, some of that. But it's like, it's whatever, man. It's like they're living well and you have the rights to be able to live your life. I mean, you can call me pretty much anything as long as I'm living that life.
Yeah.
You know? As long as I'm able to have the same freedoms and have equal rights, then I'm able to do it.
So you've been
spending
there,
a lot of time with us.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, well, I was. That's why I asked you. Can you be funny about it? Because I was just curious. So
no, I mean, there's a lot of it's just such a personal thing, such a important thing to talk about. I don't want to just like joke about it and like, and we move on. I love, the point is I love everyone. It's important. There's horrible things that are happening. It needs to be fixed. I don't know how it's going to be fixed. It's going to, I hope it's not, doesn't get much uglier than it already has. I mean, Syria's getting bombed into, it's disgusting.
It's a tough.
It's just sad, man. I think people are just oblivious, like, oh, just go eat McDonald's and watch movies and Netflix and it'll all go away. No, it's all piling up, man. Eventually, something's got to give.
Something's going to give, but I don't know what the hell it's going to be.
It's terrifying. I know. It's scary.
It's terrifying.
It's scary.
It's all England's fault. You know, it's all Britain's fault.
This is a comedy podcast. It's all fucking English fault.
Dude, man, I listen, we'd be funny all the time.
Yeah, I know.
It's funny as so. The problem with comedy is it's so restrictive.
Yeah, it
is. You know, in the end, it's like, I can't actually get to what I want to talk about because I got to get a fucking punchline in here. Like, punchlines
don't
fit.
Yeah, when you're doing an hour, though, you could squeeze that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. So so the last thing I want to talk about is I know you got to do a spot in 15 minutes, right?
Right.
So, I don't know if you noticed, but I went to China to learn Chinese to do stand-up comedy.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I did it before. I learned Irish first.
And you speak 100% Mandarin?
Yeah, I do comedy in Mandarin.
You do comedy in Mandarin?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You haven't seen it. I do it sometimes in the cellar, just a quick bit about it. But I have a whole 1 hour. I have a whole. I made a television series about it.
About
to China to learn Chinese to do stand-up.
That is the most amazing thing I've ever heard.
Okay, well.
In stand-up. That's fucking incredible.
Here's why I'm bringing
it up to you. Yeah, go for it.
Because I have been trying to do the Arabic version of the same thing.
Okay.
You know, but it takes time, obviously. I took it to Vice, but, you know, no bite yet. But, a number of people bring up people. Like, I noticed you've worked with Bassem Youssef and all that stuff. But people
I know. I was on his TV show before they yanked him off. I was actually, the two comics who were on his show, it was me and Jon Stewart, American comics.
Yeah, Jon Stewart seems to be in love with him.
Yeah, they're very, very tight. They're very, very tight.
Yeah. But anyway, when I started researching you, I saw that you were connected with that, and then you did the, what was it called?
He was at my special taping, actually, last year in May.
Yeah, but what was your trio thing that you guys, somebody else?
Allah Made Me Funny.
Oh, yeah, Allah Made Me Funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then I thought, oh, you're kind of what, people have mentioned groups, like a group of Muslim comics.
Sure,
Arab comics. So I knew that you were one of them.
Yeah, we did that for like 11 years.
Yeah, so have you done comedy in Arabic?
Yeah, I actually did my first official Arab tour in Tunisia this past June. Matter of fact, Bassem came and opened. It was very, very nice of him to come do that. And I did four shows. Three of them were in Arabic. One was for, even though it was promoted for English audiences, and the other three were in Arabic. They progressively became better, of course. I mean, because it's not like I can go out to New York City and be like, let me work out this 15-minute Arabic set.
Yeah, listen,
you can't really do that, so you just hop on stage and just
fuck around.
Do it. Yeah, you just do it.
And did you find when you were doing it in Arabic that actually the best stuff was the more impromptu stuff?
Because a little bit of everything. It was a little bit of everything. When I started translating it properly and getting the word structures correct, it was a different situation.
So here's my thinking on it, because my vision with the Chinese project was China's a super important place in the world now. Completely misunderstood. Chinese people completely misunderstood. How do you do a series about China that's not the usual fucking China's this horrible place with pollution and money and property, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
So I was like, let's figure out their sense of humor, learn their language, get to know them, and make a series about the Chinese people. So it's the same thing with the Arab world's a little different because it's not one entity. There's like all these other countries. But anyway, my mission is to do the same thing, but particularly now it's more important because people hear Arabic and they automatically think terrorist a lot nowadays. So it kind of like has an importance. But I'm curious to know what you think about that idea. Only because you've been doing that and you're in that world.
Right. No, I'm just sick of white people trying to go over to other countries and it can't freaking go to Ireland, asshole, and do that. Stop taking our jobs.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a phenomenal idea, actually. I think it's really, really cool. I totally, totally encourage you to continue on it. And anytime I have a show in the Middle East, you should come and do some stuff,
man. Yeah,
I mean,
I'm going to need help. I mean, the thing about China was I got there and I discovered a little bit of a stand-up scene, but it was quite new. The Arab world, sort of like
it's a big time. There's
Africa.
A booming
It seems to be bigger.
I was doing shows in Cairo in 2007.
Yeah. Because I thought I would base myself in Cairo at the start to just learn the language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know.
You could still do it, though. It's cool.
Every year, you just never know.
It's probably
which is
pretty
the place.
Cheap. No, it's cool. Cairo would be good, though.
Yeah, and Cairo's they have a big spot. Entertainment industry.
Big entertainment industry. But it's good, though. It's a good place to go speak Arab. I mean, go learn Arabic and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a good spot.
So, I mean, that's it. I mean, I would ask you a few more questions, but I'm aware that you got to go and rock the village. What are you? Which room are you playing now?
I'm going to McDougal.
Oh, you're doing the regular Comedy Cellar?
Yeah.
Israeli owned?
I'm happy to do it, all right? Stop trying to fuck me over,
oh,
Des.
I'm kidding, man.
I know.
No, like, they clearly like you, and it, like, they clearly love you, and you kill it every night, so it's fine. So, yeah, man, thanks for chatting to me. I mean, I'll have you on again. Maybe we could chat more about political stuff and, you know, maybe chat, like, the post-9/11 world. There's, like, loads of things
man,
we could chat
so
about.
Man, there's so much, bro. We could spend hours.
But, you know, listen, I fucking pulled you from one gig, got you
no,
in my car.
No, I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
So I'll hit you up.
You sound
soon.
So creepy when you said that. I already, you know, dragged you between shows and put you in my car and forced you in here.
Yeah, my pants are down. It's so weird.
You
up again. and you know, after this goes out, I think some people will have a lot of questions.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm down, man.
So
I'm
we'll
down.
Have you on again sometime.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
So thanks so much, man.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Mo. Thank you so much. Super interesting. I can't wait to chat to Mo again. Thanks, obviously, as always, to you, the listener. Just a few things. Since we're at the end of the podcast, I will be back in Ireland next Monday, as I said, and I will be doing the last stretch of the Grey Matters tour, touring quite a few places. First gig is in Macroom, and check out my website, desbishop.net, for dates on that. And I will also be writing for the new series I have coming out in December called This Is Ireland, 4 more eps, following that format of that election special show that some of you may have seen, very much in the John Oliver / Daily Show vein. So keep an eye out for that. And, you know, I have to say, I have very much enjoyed my time in New York, particularly lately gigging in the Comedy Cellar as much as I have been. It's been super interesting. I've gotten to watch Chris Rock work out his new show three different occasions, including last night. I have been in his presence. I mean, he kind of talks at me, at a few of us. I can't say if you turned to Chris Rock and said, "Do you know this guy?" he would ever remember me. But on numerous occasions over the last 2 weeks, he has been talking at me. I literally think that he is constantly trying out material and working out ideas. But it has been a great honor and very entertaining to be in his presence. One of the most persistently, consistently, eternally funny men that I have ever met, as in that on stage and off stage, he is just nonstop funny, never off. And I'd be happy for him to talk at me anytime. Great fun, I have to say. Also been performing with Louis C.K. I mean, I know him better because he's been to Ireland a few times. Anyway, all I can say is, I'm very excited to go back to Ireland, but I am also a little bit sad to be leaving all that. It's been very inspiring, creatively inspiring, you know, motivates you to think that there are other places you can go in your career. And so that's fresh on my mind after another night of being in the presence of all that. I mean, I won't bore you, but the other thing that's been exciting is I have started to find a sort of a different voice while on stage here in New York. And that I was surprised it took so long to find my American self on stage. This is not that I'm silencing my Irish self, but I've just only recently started to find the sort of Queen's me coming out on stage. When I say the Queen's me, I don't mean I put on the accent or anything. I just mean that the parts of me that were raised in Queens, the parts of me that are part of a Queens family, the parts of me that are just a genuine New Yorker are finding a voice on stage, which is, it's good fun, I have to say. Anyway, I'm probably just waffling, but I assume most people turn off by now anyway. Chat's done. And now I'm just sitting in a bedroom in my mother's apartment, yapping away. Anyway, I won't keep you anymore. There will be one more podcast from New York, so I'm probably a bit premature with all this pondering about heading back to Ireland. You see, I won't be back in New York till May. I will be in Ireland until the beginning of April before I go to Australia. So this is a reasonable amount of time that I won't be in New York. So that's why it's on my mind. Anyway, listen, thank you so much for all the support.
please keep giving us those lovely ratings on iTunes. Spread the word about the podcast. We will have some great Irish guests coming up for the Irish that love a bit of Ireland in the podcast. And until then, listen, I'll think about you every minute of the day. And I will look forward to chatting to you again in 7 days' time. So until then, have a good day. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.